हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनभुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Srila Prabhupada explains the holy name of Vasudeva in Srimad Bhagavatam 4.3.23 purport. In pure devotional service, one simply serves the Supreme Personality of Godhead as a matter of duty, without reason or without being impelled by material conditions. That is called Shuddha Sattva, or Vasudeva, because in that stage, the Supreme Person, Krishna, is revealed in the heart of the devotee. And so here is it. See, the Vasudeva, that platform means the personality Vasudeva was revealed in the heart.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
In his Bhagavad Sandarbha, okay, let's see. Srila Jiva Goswami has very nicely described this Vasudeva, or Shuddha Sattva, in his Bhagavad Sandarbha. He explains that Ashto Tara Sata, 108, is added to the name of the spiritual master to indicate one who is situated in Shuddha Sattva, or in the transcendental state of Vasudeva. The word Vasudeva is also used for other purposes. For example, Vasudeva also means one who is everywhere, or all-pervading. The sun is also called Vasudeva Shabditam. The word Vasudeva may be utilized for different purposes, but whatever purpose we adopt, Vasudeva means the all-pervading or localized Supreme Personality of Godhead. In Bhagavad Gita 7.19, it is also stated, Vasudeva Sarvam Iti. Factual realization is to understand Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and surrender unto Him. Vasudeva is the ground wherein Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is revealed. Right? I think it's supposed to be a long on the other one. Yeah. Okay, so then you have this Vasudeva Sattva will arrange anywhere for just the all-pervading aspect of the Lord, being situated in the transcendental position, up to then understanding the personality of Godhead. Right? So for the devotee, then they're situated in that. In other words, they're connected with the Lord, but they're progressing towards understanding the personality of Godhead. Okay?
Brahman realization.
So, yes. Well, I mean, just means Brahman situate. You're situated in Brahman. Then within that situation of Brahman, then understanding the personality of Godhead becomes very easy, right? Because from the Brahman platform, when one is transcendental, very easy to understand, just like we see Sukadeva Goswami and the others.
Yeah.
Right? So, but means we only bring this up because it's not what's the discussion here, but just so we don't become confused when we get into the elements of creation later, is that it's the same position of being situated that all the living entities are when they're in Mahat. Right? Because they're also on the Vasudeva Sattva platform. But they're only situated there. They don't have realization of the Lord.
Yes.
It just happens to be where they're. You know what I mean? Saying, if you're in primary creation as just the Lord, then there isn't something else other than Vasudeva Sattva.
Yes.
Right? Only when the secondary creation comes, then there's a place for the living entity to express his
consciousness that isn't Vasudev Sattva. Does that make sense? So in other words, they're situated in Vasudev Sattva, but their consciousness is not there. While when we're discussing the devotees, then they're situated there and the consciousness is there. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
So Maharaj?
So
when you say about Vasudev, means it's like the form of the Lord.
Yes.
Can be two and four arms.
Yes.
Both.
Yes.
When the yogis do meditation, they meditate on one of these two arms, four arms?
Generally, they meditate on four arms because they're meditating on Paramatma. But it's not that they couldn't meditate on two arms, but technically, Patanjali, it's four arms.
Okay. So Paramatma is always four arms?
Yes.
I heard that there's...
A little louder, please.
I heard that those who are very attached to impersonal understanding Brahman, for them it is very difficult to change their conception to personal.
Means, it depends, no, it means if you're talking about Mayavadis, for them it's very difficult. For Brahmavadis it's not. Because Brahmavadis are just situated on Brahman, so they can understand what is Brahman. So if they come into they come across a superior form of Brahman, they don't have a difficulty with it. Mayavadis, their whole philosophy is based on there can be no form, anything like that. They have a difficulty. Say it again. Srila Raghava Goswami compares Lord Vasudeva with other Vishnu Tattva forms. These verses taken from Hari Bhakti Ratna Prakash will be a great use for further studies of the rest of the canto. The most perfect form is Bhagavan Krishna Chandra, who remains in Vrindavan. All other forms of the Lord are not as perfect. The more perfect forms are Lord Balaram and Lord Vasudev, who reigns as the king at Dwarka. The perfect forms include Lord Prajumna, Lord Aniruddha, and other forms of the Lord. Lord Brahma, Lord Vishnu, Lord Shiva, Lord Mahavishnu, and others are also counted in the perfect category. Akura traveled to Mathura with the Vasudeva feature of Lord Vishnu. When the Lord was going to Mathura, Akura saw him as Lord Vasudeva reclining on the lap of thousand-headed Lord Ananta, Srimad Bhagavatam 10:39-46, on the curved lap of Seshanaga. Akura saw Krishna sitting very soberly, with four hands. His eyes were like the reddish petals of a lotus flower. His complexion was the dark color of a rain cloud, and he was dressed in yellow silken garments. In the same way, the Lord appeared in Dwarka in his Vasudeva form. This may be known from the following passage of Srimad Bhagavatam, 10:60-44, where Rukmini Devi says to Lord Vasudeva, "O my Lord, O subduer of enemies, an unfortunate woman who has never heard of your glories may accept an ordinary man as her husband. But a woman who has learned about you, that you are praised not only in this world, but in the halls of the great demigods like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, will not accept anyone besides yourself as her husband." End quote. We may note that although Srimati Rukmini Devi does not mention Lord Vasudeva by name, it is clear from a description of the Lord that she refers to the Vasudeva expansion of Lord Vishnu. The qualities of Lord Vishnu are described in the following statement of Brihannaradiya Purana. Right. See, here is that when we're talking about the Chaturvyuha, then the Chaturvyuha themselves, then each is manifesting particular qualities. Not that they don't have all the qualities, but of the six qualities, you know, taken from the six aspects of opulence, then they're manifesting two. Right? Vasudeva is manifesting four, but that's in the past time. So Narayan means that you're having all those four together. Right? Does that make sense? Because each one of them can manifest any of them, but for taste, they're manifesting the one. Right? Narayana is manifesting all of them, but to taste them specifically, then is the Chaturvyuha.
Yes. Four or six?
Excuse me, it means, I'm talking about the four meaning the Chaturvyuha, and then there's the six qualities. Right? So then you have two, 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 and three of them, and then Vasudeva is all six. Yes? Okay, Lord Brahma is known as Swayambhu because he is the first living entity to appear in the universe. Lord Shiva is known as Hara because he destroys the material universe. Lord Vishnu is known by his name because he is the master of all powers and opulences. After he had gone to Mathura in order to kill Kamsa, Lord manifested the power and opulence of the Vishnu Vasudeva form. This is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam 10.43.17. In the following words, which describe Lord Vasudeva's opulence of appearing differently to different living entities. Within Kamsa's wrestling arena, the Lord appeared to the wrestlers exactly like a thunderbolt. To the people in general, he appeared as the most beautiful personality. To the females, he appeared to be the most attractive male, Cupid personified. The Lord also exhibited the character of Lord Vasudeva in other situations. Right, so here he's used the term character, right? Because that's that. It's a mood. So Vasudeva is a mood, because as we remember, that's what makes Goloka in its own category, is because it's Krishna through all the realms. It's not a different Krishna in Vrindavan, different Krishna in Mathura, different Krishna in Dwarka. It's the same Krishna, just different moods or different character. Right, like you say, oh, he's manifesting these aspects of his character, right, in a certain situation. So that's what's happening. Right? When you go to Vaikuntha, there it's different. Right, it means it's still Krishna, but then very much the form is different. We identify as different. Right, when the gopis, they see the four-armed form of Vishnu, right, then they think that he's a different aspect. Even though, of course, he's Krishna, but it's a different aspect, so you're not talking about the same. The mood won't be the same flavor, because Krishna and Dwarka can relate to the residents of Vrindavan. He's thinking of them. He's absorbed in that thought. Does that make sense? Well, in the Vishnu Murti, he thinks about the pastimes that are going on there. So he's actually servant of Krishna. Does that make sense?
Yes.
You know, just like Balaram is servant of Krishna. Mm-hmm. There's a slight difference. Mm-hmm. Right. So then it takes up that difference. Means, in other words, the expansion is a different mentality, a different mood, meaning a different personality. While here, same personality, different characteristics.
Yes.
Yes. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
The Lord also exhibited the character of Lord Vasudeva in other situations. One example is how he expanded into 16,000 forms to enjoy transcendental pastimes in the different homes of his 16,000 wives in Dwarka, as was observed by Mahamuni Narada. Another example is the Lord's revelation of his universal form to Arjuna. The Lord also exhibited a forearm form during the great battles fought after his kidnapping Rukmini, and after his taking the Parijata tree of Indra. At various other times also, the Lord of Dwarka rode on Garuda and also exhibited a four-armed form holding the conch, disc, club, and lotus. This feature of Lord Vasudeva is also described by Lord Shiva in the following word, Srimad Bhagavatam 4.24.28. Lord Shiva continued, "Any person who has surrendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, the controller of everything, material nature as well as the living entity, is actually very dear to me." This evidence clearly demonstrates that the Lord's form in Mathura and Dwarka is the expansion of Lord Vasudeva. The form of Sri Krishna Chandra is the ultimate form of the Lord and is superior to his form as Vishnu Vasudeva. Vishnu Vasudeva is the master of Vaikuntha Loka. From him, Lord Mahavishnu is expanded. To prove that the Lord's form at Dwarka is Vishnu Vasudeva, the following evidence is quoted. When Jaya and Vijaya were cursed by the Brahmanas at the gateway of Vaikuntha Loka, the Supreme Personality of Godhead spoke to them the following words. Quote, "If you both agree to become my enemies, I shall liberate you after three births." For this reason, Jaya and Vijaya were born as Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, whom Lord Vishnu killed in his forms of Varaha and Nrisingha. In the next yuga, Jaya and Vijaya were born as Ravana and Kumbhakarna, and were killed by Lord Vishnu as forms as Ramachandra and Lakshmana. After that, Jaya and Vijaya were born as Shishupala and Dantavakra, and Lord Vishnu appeared as Lord Vasudeva, and Lord Balaram killed them. In this way, Jaya and Vijaya attained liberation after three births. Sri Krishna Chandra's power and opulence is superior to that of Lord Vishnu and that of any other person. This is confirmed by the following statement of Narada Pancharatra. The forms of Lord Ramachandra and other incarnations of Godhead all spring from Sri Krishna, the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. From this we may understand that all Vishnu forms and other forms of the Personality of Godhead are expanded from Sri Krishna Chandra. Sri Krishna Chandra, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, stays in Divya Vrindavan. He is described in the Goloka Samhita. The transcendental realm of Vrindavan is situated within the Brahman effulgence. In that transcendental Vrindavan are Radhika Devi, whom all the Lord's potencies respectfully worship, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, the crest jewel of all deities. The Bhagavatam verse commentary on 1.1.2.3 is from Hari Bhakti Ratna Prakash, 5th Ray. Chapter 1, summarize, yes.
What is Divya Vrindavan?
Divya Vrindavan just means transcendental Vrindavan. I think it's just the terms he's using to point out, because it's being mentioned, it's situated in the Brahman effulgence, so you understand it's not within the material realm.
Yes.
And then it's a transcendental place, because otherwise these human pastimes are going on, so one might think otherwise. Yes.
So what is the difference between Narayana and Vasudeva?
Not specifically. I mean, it depends upon... Here is that Vasudeva is that form of Krishna and Dwarka, like that, or Mathura. And Narayana is then that forearm form where he, you know, identifies as God. See, as Vasudeva, he's performing human pastimes, right? So of the forms of Vishnu Vasudeva, Krishna Chandra is the supreme. So all these ones that he does human pastimes, and Krishna and Vrindavan is the supreme. Then as Narayana, there the mood is that he is God, so he's performing pastimes as God. Right, so that's why we see this a very different mentality. Chapter 1 summarizes questions and answers. Questions 26, 27, 28 of the Srimad Bhagavatam are asked by Maharaj Parikit of Sukadeva Goswami. Questions 26 and 27. I am therefore begging you, Sukadeva Goswami, to show the way of perfection for all persons, and especially for one who is about to die. Please let me know what a man should hear, chant, remember, and worship, and also what he should not do. Please explain all this to me. These questions were asked at the end of Canto 1, 1.19.37.38. The answer to these two questions is given in 2.1.1-21 and the rest of Srimad Bhagavatam. Question 28. The fortunate King Parikit inquired further, said, O Brahmana, please describe in full detail how and where the mind has to be applied and how the conception can be fixed so that the dirty things in a person's mind can be removed. 2.1.22. The question is answered in 2.1.22-29. Adhyaya Prakash. Okay, so here we see is that, okay, what should one be doing? Right, and what he should not do. Right, because what he should not do gets in the way of what you should do. That's why you don't do it. Right, you know, don't stick your hand in the blender. Right,
why?
Because it gets in the way of actually getting other things blended. Right, you know. So that's the whole point is that the nishads are there just because you shouldn't do them because they bother the actual things that you should be doing. Does that make sense? So it's not about not doing them, that that's the perfection. So it's not about following the four regulative principles, that that's the focus. No, those get in the way of chanting Hare Krishna. Right? So chanting 16 rounds, following the regulative principles. The chanting is what you're supposed to do. The four regulative principles are what you're not supposed to be involved in. Right? You're not supposed to engage in those activities. Does that make sense? So that's why he's asking, what is the full picture? Then he's going, now how should we apply the mind? Where should it be applied? Because that's a major principle. What to do with the mind? You see, he's not saying how to stop the mind, how to disengage. He's not asking like that. He's saying how to engage the mind, where to apply the mind. Right? So it doesn't have that. He has that educated element that he knows the mind has to be engaged. There's no such thing as a non-engaged mind. Right? That's why you can, if you put in your 7 hours in front of a brick wall, then you're considered a good Buddhist, right? But they can't do it 24/7. There's no such thing.
Question is if they can do it for the 7 hours.
Whatever they talk about, it's considered imperfection. I'm sure somebody at one time did like that. But at least in any case, they sit there for 7 hours. What, who knows what they're thinking of?
Exactly,
like that Bach or something. Yes.
I think it's very interesting that the second question is about the mind, not about the intelligence.
Because the mind is what you're actually working with. Intelligence, technically, is a subsection of the mind. Right? Technically, means you have the mind as an element. Right? And the intelligence is an element, false ego is an element. But all that's together as one subtle body. It's not three subtle bodies. So the mind is what controls the subtle body. So you have, in the function of that overall mind, then you have mind, intelligence, mind, and false ego. Right? Because the mind is what's going to be functioning at all times. Because intelligence can analyze, but what is it going to analyze? It can be analyzing anything. So it analyzes what the mind gives it. Right? And then the false ego is there. You have an identity, but the mind is what accepts that identity. And the mind is what chooses to do things based on that identity. So therefore, that whole process, then that we can call that whole process the mind, because that's the practical. It's made of three separate dead elements.
Yes.
Right? But we, our power... our consciousness is projected into it. Mm-hmm. So because of that, then it can do those functions. Does that make sense? Like the rock is hard.
Yes.
So you can use it for things that require hardness. Mm-hmm. Right? So the mind and the intelligence, false ego, they can do those certain things also. Right? Accept and reject, separate and gather together. And create I am this, or this is me, like this. So, but you have to put power into it, just like a machine will work if you put power. You know what I'm saying? The car is not going on its own, you have to put power into it. But if you put that power, it does all kinds of things. You don't put the power, it doesn't. So if you put your consciousness into mind, intelligence, and false ego, they'll do these things, and so they appear that they're their own entity. Because otherwise then we may object that, how is dead matter giving us so much trouble? That's because we put the energy into it. You know what I'm saying? It's like we turn the switch on, and then, whatever the machine, it gives us all kinds of problem. And then we're complaining it's giving us problem. It's like, we're the one that flicked the switch. Right? You know what I'm saying? It's not that, the machine is, manhandling us, and the switch is somewhere else, and we can't get to the switch anymore. The switch is right in our hand. Yes, that's the situation. That's called dumb, right?
Yeah.
But what to do? When it comes to the dumb contest, we're all winners. Yeah. Every contestant is a winner. Every contestant goes home beaten by the three modes of nature. Yes.
When the 16 principles of creation are described, the mind is mentioned in there. Is that just the single element or three combined?
Generally, it's a single element. But the thing is you could also condense those 16, because there's 24 total, right? Those 16 you condense to one. And then the other 8, then that makes 9 elements. Like Lord Brahma in Brahma Samhita describes the creation as 9 elements. Because the mind means those 16, because that's what it controls. Or, but Kapila Devi, Lord Chaitanya, you know, was accepting and professing, was the description of it as 24. Because then it's more clear that all these differences, but then we don't see that togetherness. But that can be understood. The other is together, but then we don't necessarily look at the distinctions of each element. Right? Does that make sense? So it's a matter of, on the mind, it's, you can look at the oneness or the difference. It doesn't matter, but both are there.
Okay. Adhyaya Prakashika. To the questions put before him at the end of Canto 1, Srila Sukadeva Goswami replies that this type of question is most beneficial for all kinds of people, and its answer is the prime subject matter for hearing. Right? As we see, he'll take the whole Bhagavatam to explain this. Because right? what should a man hear, chant, remember, and worship? So that's going to be the whole rest of the whole Bhagavatam. And also, what should he not do? Right? So we're going to see, you know, things you should not do, right? Don't laugh at Shiva's wife. No. You know, we're going to see all these different things. So, you know, what is proper etiquette and things like that? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, don't go into, how you say, someone else's house, take the form of her husband and spend time with his wife. Especially if he's a powerful sage, right? You know, things like that. So you hear, you see all these things. Don't do these things. Right? You know. Right. So here he's saying it's beneficial because he asked properly about the Lord and how to engage the mind, you know, in these activities, rather than how to remove the mind from everything so that it's not absorbed in anything. Because that then is not a question, you know. Or, you know, it's like coming in and saying, you know, it's just like, how do I get my dog to stop barking, drooling, having fleas, and to be able to climb trees? That's not a question, right? See, that's the problem. Is in the modern, is if it could be thought of, because we're dealing with the modern academies about. Just mental speculation, right? The taste of it. And so if you can do it in a refined way that others can appreciate, right? In other words, if it gets too weird, then people don't necessarily appreciate. Some do, some don't, right? James Joyce is popular in some circles, some intellectual circles, they just stay away from it, right? Too crazy. So the whole point is that how it means how you can go into whatever can be done. And then then people may appreciate or not. So then the difficulty comes up is here, it's not about that. Just because we can think of it, just because we feel it, doesn't mean it's a value, of use. Right? Sometimes it comes up is that someone has a doubt about how Prabhupada does things and all that. The why he does things, okay, why did Prabhupada do this? Then that's a valid question. But, you know, this is not by modern standards. That's not a valid question. Does that make sense? Because since when does the modern perspective become a point of authority? Because it's speculation. Yes.
Preacher Prabhu was giving Bhagavatam class yesterday. He was quoting from Prabhupada some conversation, and the person was saying, "Well, I think," and Prabhupada said, "Don't do that."
Because I think it doesn't mean I'm contemplating Krishna consciousness. It means I'm speculating, right? Because if the speculative process is used in Krishna consciousness, we call it contemplation, right? Like that. But if it's not used in Krishna consciousness, we call it speculation, right? Just as if you engage the senses not in Krishna, we call it sense gratification. You engage it in Krishna, we call it devotional service. Yes. Materially engrossed people are baffled by too many subjects for hearing because they are blind to the knowledge of the absolute truth, right? It's just like you have
means you take like a, means of a general popular magazine that you see everybody, everyone's heard about, like Time, Newsweek, these kind of things. Now, what is the range of subject matter? Yeah, it's everything. You know, it's you understand? But most magazines focus on one thing. You know, you have a photography magazine, it just deals with that, or car, or motorcycle, or bicycle, or rollerblade, or, you know, it just has one thing it deals with. These deal with everything, wide range. So this is the point, because this is what everybody wants. They all these things are in their head. So then you can go through the magazine, catch all these different things. That's why they're most known, most popular. Some people don't even know about other magazines. Yes?
Your Parikshit Maharaj is asking about application of the mind. So in case of sadhakas, it is very easy for us to apply the mind on Krishna by engaging our senses in different services,
right.
Devotional services. But for the impersonalist, where do they apply the mind? Because that kind of meditation on the impersonal Brahman is very, very difficult. So where do they exactly apply their mind?
Means this is just a question of interest, or yeah. You have some certain meditation that
no,
you've been really disturbed about and you haven't been able to perfect up to now.
It's only out of interest.
Oh, okay. One is that it's impossible to do what they talk about because it doesn't exist. In personal meditation, there is no such thing. Right? We're people. How are we going to meditate on non-people? Right? It doesn't work like that. Does that make sense? Right? Therefore, they imagine forms. Or they'll use recommended forms. Like Patanjali will give you meditate on the super soul. So therefore, the smartas will choose different deities and meditate on them. Does that make sense? Okay. They're baffled by too many subjects for hearing because they're blind to the knowledge of the absolute truth. Right? The variety is there in the absolute truth, so that's not a problem. But that's just the various elements of just how wonderful Krishna is. The material energy, we need that variety because one subject matter, one specific, gets boring after a while.
Yes.
Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. During the day, they work hard to earn money. At night, they pass their time in sleep and sexual indulgence. The truth is ever right before their eyes, but they do not see their inevitable destruction. One who desires to become freed from all material miseries must hear about, glorify, and remember the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The highest perfection is to remember Lord Narayana at the end of life. Sri Sukadeva then relates that at the end of Dwapara Yuga, he studied the great literature Srimad Bhagavatam from his father. Sukha was a perfect liberated soul even before his birth. Yet the topics of the Lord's pastimes were attractive to he who was beyond all material attraction. Yes?
So why is Narayan mentioned here when Vasudeva has just been glorified?
It means the Supreme Lord. Like that. Because here, then, you're talking a generic. Like that. That's, see, the others, then, you're getting into detail between the moods of the Lord and his different incarnations. But in this case, it just means Lord Narayana, means, you know, the Supreme Personality. Because this is universal for everybody. Like that. Does that make sense? Because he said, for all people. So therefore, then you use Narayana, then all people can relate. Yes?
Narayana has a meaning of the shelter of all the entities.
Yes, yes. Does that make sense? Narayana means that shelter. Okay. Such attachment to the transcendental quality, here's, that was the answer to your question. Yet the topics, he was liberated before his birth, yet topics of the Lord's pastimes were attractive to he who was beyond all material attraction. That was, such attachment to the transcendental qualities of the Lord constitutes the way of further advancement, even for a siddha completely detached from matter. The chanting of the holy name and the glories of the Lord is the doubtless and fearless means of spiritual success. So even one who's liberated, because we may think that there's one process for the non-liberated, another process for the liberated, the process is the same, because where you're trying to get to is beyond liberation. Right? It's like saying, I'm going to Calcutta. So there's a different method for someone who's in Mayapur and a different method for someone who's in Krishnagar. No, but Calcutta is beyond the two of them. Right? So the point is liberation beyond that is prema. So the process remains the same, because those who are, it gets you to that position of prema, but those on the platform of prema, they're also engaged in the same process. Right? Does that make sense?
It seems,
because that's the perfect thing to do. So you don't have to do something else to get there.
It seems different because different things are prominent according to where you are in the process.
Yes, that's there, but that doesn't mean that it's not the same thing. You know, it's just like buying the vegetables, cutting the vegetables, you know, cooking the vegetables, serving the vegetables, eating the vegetables. It's all one process. Like that. Sukadeva points out the uselessness of a prolonged life devoid of Krishna consciousness. As seen by the example of Katvanga Maharaj, even though one may have a mere moment left to live, if that moment is spent taking complete shelter of the Supreme Lord, it is enough to free one from material life. Because then there's a value. Otherwise, like I mentioned, there was that one gentleman who, you know, came to the authorities' attention because he fell out of a tree picking apples. He was a migratory, you know, worker. And so they took him to the hospital. Then he's not in the records. You know, then they find out that he's something like 125 years old or older, you know, like that. But what does he do? You know, he picks fruit. That's all he does. That's, you know, so he has this super long life, but all he does with it is pick fruit. Right? So that's what Sukadeva Goswami is talking about. It's a waste of time. Right? If he was God conscious, then he's picking fruit to maintain himself, then that's fine. Right? But that's all the better it gets. Right? Now he's going to have to stick to strawberries. Right? Sukadeva then said that Maharaj Prickett is even more fortunate than Katvanga Maharaj because he has 7 days to prepare for death. At the end of life, one must be bold enough to fearlessly cut off all attachment to the material body and all desires that pertain to it. Right? One must be bold enough. Because if you don't, then that's another birth. You cut them off, then you go back to Godhead. But the problem is one may say, no, but then what about them? What about the relationships? But the problem is, by the time you take birth again, it's not necessarily that they're still around or that they'll even recognize who you are. Like that example Prabhupada says of the man who is so attached to his wealth and his possessions and everything. So in his next life, he was born as a beggar that lived in the street outside in front of that house. And when he went to beg at that house, his own sons from his previous life beat him and sent him away. So in other words, there is zero advantage to thinking of the family and one's material desires at the time of death. It's not that that sentiment has some nobility to it, some gloriousness or romantic concept that there's something great has been performed or accomplished. Because the relationship won't continue anyway in the same form. Yeah.
Can we say that we don't even take the sentiment with us, seeing as we forget?
We don't. No, the sentiment will go with us because we have that sentiment, you know, towards family members. But it won't be those family members because we'll forget that.
Yeah.
You know, it'll be towards our new family. Let's say, you know, the oink or something. But the same kind of sentiment
just
is there.
For the relation.
Yeah. You know, everybody gets together. You know, lays in line, piles up on top of each other when they sleep. You know, it's like, you know, it works.
Intimate.
Yeah, it's close. It's close. Real close, tight knit family.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Like that.
Okay.
Then Srila Sukadeva Goswami explains how a materialistic person can begin their spiritual life by meditating upon the universal form of the Lord. When he is more elevated, a yogi may meditate upon the Paramatma feature of the Lord, who is situated with the heart. Then ultimately, when the personal feature of the Lord is fully realized, one can begin to act on the platform of pure devotional service. So then that's really the point. That's the way, that's always the goal that's pointed out, because the tendency is we will deal on that platform at certain times, but not necessarily all the time. Other times we do something, oh, because we're supposed to do this. You know what I'm saying? It's like the cowherd boys, when they wake up in the morning, what's the first thing they want to do? Go see Krishna, right? And then with Krishna milk the cows, right? Because the first thing that you do as a duty, as a cowherd, is milk the cows. But they want to see Krishna and do that with Krishna. So they just get up and spontaneously want to go to where Krishna is. Okay? So in the morning when we wake up, is that same mood there? Or is it that we're supposed to be at Mangal Arati? You know, it's the Brahma Muhurta, best time for spiritual realization. I know I'm taking it way beyond what we're going to be thinking about here. You're just supposed to be there, or it's the, you know, the social things that, you know, someone will comment, you know, make that you know, the person, the all-knowing, you know, person that makes the comment about, oh, you weren't in Mangal Arati today. You know, so that, you know, and we don't want to go through that, so... You understand? So this is, you know, the Paramatma feature. We're doing because we're supposed to. Does that make sense? You know, or how you say, desperately trying to find a way to connect our continuing to sleep to the universal form. Right? We're sleeping yoga. Okay.
Close.
Yeah. Close. Yeah. Okay, Sloka Anushan. Summary of verses. Does that make sense? In other words, we're engaged in those parts, but for us, that's secondary, because the point in even dealing with Brahman and Paramatma platforms of the Lord is to know Krishna as the person. So for us, it's the Krishna as the person. These are sub-aspects of his manifestation. So even though we deal with it, we don't really necessarily even identify that that's what we're dealing with. So technically, that's what we're doing. Right? So it's only necessary if that technique needs to be identified or needs to be separated from materialistic elements. Then we have to identify. Otherwise, then we just see that we're doing it for Krishna. Right? We're following the rules because it pleases Krishna, not because it pleases Paramatma. Right? You know, we're trying to be transcendental situated because it pleases Krishna, not because being transcendental is a purpose. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's all, that's why if you have the personal aspect, the other two are already included.
Yes.
Shloka Anusharana. Summary of verses 1 to 6. The highest perfection is to remember the Lord at the end of life. Verses 7 to 11. Even the liberated persons are attracted by Krishna Katha. The highest type of Krishna Katha is chanting of the holy name. Aspect of 7-11 one didn't necessarily know about. Verses 12 to 15, right? Right? You've never gone in the correct section, right? The Krishna Katha section, right? You know? At the last stage of life, one should cut off all material attachments. Right? We see Kunti does that. Right? That Yudhishthira Maharaj does that. The Pandavas then follow the footsteps through that. Parikit Maharaj is doing that. Right, so it's just that's recommended. 16 to 21, preparing for death. Verses 22 to 39, outline of the yoga practice. How to see everything in connection to the Lord. Verses 1 to 6. The highest perfection is to remember the Lord at the end of life. To the question put before him at the end of Canto 1. Srila Sukadeva Goswami replies, "My dear King, your question is glorious. It is most beneficial for all kinds of people. The answer to this question is the prime subject matter for hearing. One who desires to become freed from all material miseries must hear about, glorify, and remember the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The highest perfection is to remember Lord Narayana at the end of life. The chapter opens with Sri Sukadeva Goswami praising Maharaj Parikshit's question. The previous study guide presents it as the last two questions of Canto 1, namely, I am therefore begging you, Sukadeva Goswami, to show the way of perfection for all persons. Right? So, the way of perfection for all persons. Because one may say, okay, though that works for them, but not for us. You know, we're situated in this particular geographical and climactic area of the world, so therefore what Sukadeva Goswami talks about is not actually for us. But the question is, what's beneficial for all persons? Right? Like that. And especially for one who is about to die. Right? And seeing that, by looking at history, the mortality rate of human beings has been 100%. Therefore, it is valuable for everybody. Right? Please let me know what a man should hear, chant, remember, and worship, and also what he should not do. Please explain all this to me. 1:19-37-38, questions 26 and 27. Associating with devotees facilitates hearing Krishna Katha. Achieving the association of devotees is Krishna's direct mercy upon the soul, for it allows one to hear Krishna Katha. Let's explain by Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that when the living entity is actually serious about knowing the Lord, because he has no way of knowing how to know the Lord, but just he has that desire, the Lord puts him in contact with devotees. Right? So when that interest comes, because it's generic, you want to know who God is, what is going on, why it's going like this, from that particular angle, you know, one's not distracted by what the local people are doing, by conspiracy theories, by this and that. That is just that, you know, you want to actually know. So then Krishna puts you in contact with the devotees, right? That contact, then by hearing from them, by associating with them, right? You're engaged in devotional service, you hear about Krishna, that develops the punya, or the piety required to take up, to gain faith. Right. Once you gain faith, then one's said to be situated on the devotional path. Before that is preliminary. But it's still the association of devotees and hearing Krishna Katha and rendering service in that association that makes you qualified for devotional service. That's why karma and jnana can't, or yoga, cannot generate devotional service. Right? Right? Doing yoga sans won't generate devotional service.
Yes.
Right? Like that. Hearing philosophy won't degenerate it. Doing pious activities won't generate it. That's why one may be engaged in these activities, but they have to be connected with association of Vaishnavas and Krishna Katha. So it's actually the association and the Krishna Katha that will generate.
Yes.
And these others is just the medium where you happen to find people. Because basically you can guarantee people will be doing one of three things. Right? Engaged in fruitive activities, engaged in the mental speculation, or engaged in yoga. Right? And nowadays, you know, yoga is about 20 minutes a day for the really regulated, you know, upbeat, you know, yuppie guys. But so therefore, yoga is counted as part of karma, fruitive activities, because the reason they're doing it is for a particular benefit. So, you're going to find two kind of people engaged in two kind of activities. So it really simplifies it down. So those activities connected with devotional service, right, by devotees in parampara will give you bhakti. Right? But if people are not, then it won't. So that's the difference. Right? So many people are doing yoga, so many people are doing kirtans, but only if you come in contact with devotees in parampara, hear Krishna katha from them, then you'll get bhakti. Yes.
You said hearing philosophy won't give you bhakti, but it seems that Krishna Katha and philosophy is kind of, if not synonymous, then at least overlapping.
Yes, but that philosophy is a discussion about Krishna.
Yes.
Right here, we'll just ask a expert in the area. Okay?
Okay.
For all those years that they taught you philosophy, Was there any discussions about Krishna and, you know, actual knowing the absolute truth, coming to the point of Siddhanta?
No. Okay. But that was 4 years.
But is that philosophy? Or is that mental
technique? That's what they call it. They call it philosophy.
Like that.
So that's the point.
They took in a course on Indian religion, and Krishna did come up once. Bhagavad Gita was even discussed once.
Was not.
Wow. That's impressive.
That's like discussing Western religion and not bringing out the Bible. You know, Moses or Jesus didn't even figure in the conversation. Brought him up once. You know. It's a passive comment. You know.
Okay. So.
It means, because we're talking material, so material means it's philosophy that's not actually real.
Mental speculation.
Yeah, so even if you take it to higher stages of Gautama, Vaisheshika, Patanjali, Shankya, how you say it? Yeah, it means that Kapila and Jaimini, still they don't get through it. And then Vedanta they never really discuss. That's so far beyond their ability that they just wouldn't be able to deal with that.
Yeah, where I'm studying, they say that Vedanta is just like a kitchery of all philosophies, just trying to please the people.
Yeah, what they don't understand is Vedanta is the actual philosophy, and the others are taking a part of it and trying to make it complete.
So they're putting Vedanta at the bottom, actually.
Yeah, but that's why they'll never understand it.
That's interesting.
But the point is they could just say it's trying to please everybody, but then the point is all the people that in society that we consider are the top of society, that's what they're trying to do. Your politicians, your celebrities, your intellectuals. Yeah. Means at the university, who are they trying to please?
Everybody.
Right, yeah, because they're not trying to please. They're not an independent person who couldn't care less.
No.
Right? You know, Diogenes, he was such an intellectual. But, you know, other than that one point, no one discusses him.
No.
Right? So in other words, he's also exactly the same.
It's a business.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah. So even from that point, then they should appreciate it that therefore it's the topmost of all.
That's actually true, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, according to their own philosophy.
You can bring that up.
Yeah,
I was just thinking, you know, what if you looked at it this way? What would you think of that, you know?
Yeah.
And you might go, interesting point. Yeah, okay. Okay. In his purport to 211, Srila Prabhupada, did you have your hand up?
No.
Okay. In his purport to 211, Srila Prabhupada paraphrases Srimad Bhagavatam 10.1.16. The activities of Krishna are non-different from Krishna himself. As long as one is engaged in hearing such transcendental activities of Krishna, he remains aloof from the conditional life of material existence. The topics of Lord Krishna are so auspicious that they purify the speaker, the hearer, and the inquirer. Is that why it's such a respected magazine or something? No? Oh, okay. It's not a purified platform. They are compared to the Ganges water, which flow from the toe of Lord Krishna. Wherever the Ganges water go, they purify the land and the persons who bathe in them. Similarly, Krishna Katha, or the topics of Krishna, are so pure that wherever they are spoken, the place, the hearer, the inquirer, the speaker, and all concerned become purified. That means even places that aren't within the, Indian subcontinent, you know, then become purified by Krishna Katha and attain a position that they're not necessarily naturally fit for. So this is the point, is that that's why it says for all persons. Right? So the person speaking, the person hearing, the place, the person inquiring, everybody becomes benefited. So it's the perfect thing. Sukadeva Goswami begins by answering first the question, what should one hear, chant, and remember and worship? 2-4. One should not be absorbed in the countless types of material sound vibrations. In other words, one should not be a Grihamedi. 2. Srila Prabhupada explains in his purport.
In the revealed scriptures, there are two nomenclatures for the householder's life. Right? So this is the important thing, because we take a householder, you know, means grihastha. Then grihamedi is that, you know, grungy, you know, funky, dirty, smelly, you know, stinky, you know, how you say, non-devotional...
Ratbag.
Yeah, ratbag, yes. Right? But here, prophets say, no, there's two nomenclatures for a householder's life. Right? One is grihastha, the other is grihamedi. The grihastha is those who live together with wife and children, but live transcendentally for realizing the ultimate truth. The grihamedis, however, those who live only for the benefit of family members, extended or centralized, and thus are envious of others. Extended or centralized means either in a bigger family or community context or just in their own protonic, you know, family context. Yes?
In this context, what is meant by envious of others?
Trying to find another example than the one that came to my mind. You know, someone's developing, you know, why are they developing, who are they, what's their position, they're new, you know, all these different things. Whatever may be reasons why one feels in a superior position. Like that. You know, so in other words, the grihastha is one who is trying to not be involved in the grihamedi mentality, right? In other words, the grihastha is progressive. They understand it's not good, so even if it comes up, they deal with it according to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra and not apply it, right? Or do their best to not apply it. Grihamedi is one who says, I'm just being practical and this is reality, we're just being real. You know, this is natural. What's the problem? Does that make sense? That's the difficulty, right?
It seems to me that you can be a Korean medium, but be envious of others.
No, you'll always be. How one will not be? Because the point is, one is the controller and enjoyer. So one always considers that he is the center. Right? So therefore, everybody else, as long as they're in line with you as the center, it's great. As soon as they're not, then there's a problem. One may be, by culture, avoid those situations and those persons that enviousness may come up because it's considered to be not an ideal quality to manifest. But it's not that it's not there. You know what I'm saying? Right, so even the nicest, most pious person, you know, if you have the right situation, will admit that there are moments where they do feel bad towards others, like that. But it may be less, or maybe not a constant, that they're just envious of all living entities. You know, I mean, that's your more extreme, you know, kind of situation. Yes?
That the sentence on the house comes out in the word "maybe," which
yes.
means a fixing post.
Yes.
The animal is like
yes.
Because the situation of the
grihamedi
is
bound. Yes. So we understand is that because the grihamedi means that stick, everything's going around the house, that means you can also add Krishna in that circle. So therefore, they're a progressive grihamedi, right? You know, just like I think they had the term, I don't know if they still use it, the term conscientious carnivore. They still use that term? Yeah. So in other words, a meat eater who's conscientious of the process and tries to minimalize or, you know, only, yeah, you know, that the animals were happy before they killed them. You know, we only eat happy animals.
Yeah.
You know.
Take a happy animal and then kill it and eat it.
Yes, yeah, like that. So you do have that. So you kind of have the you know, the how you say, The grihamedi who has that element added to their life, right? But generally speaking, once it comes to shraddha, then it should be changing into grihastha. You know what I'm saying? So we don't bother those who have added Krishna, even if they're grihamedis, because it's progressive. If that is cultivated, it's just a matter of time before it switches, because the position won't change. It's not that
The house of a Grihamedi looks one way, house of a Grihastha looks another, right? You know, you just walk in the front door, you can tell. In fact, you can just tell by the front door. You know, like that. You just, there's a completely different kind of house, you know. You know, you call up your friend, you know, hey, I was sick, you know, we come over. No, sorry, I'm remodeling. Remodeling, why? You just remodeled, you know, before. He says, no, but I'm remodeling now as a Grihastha. He says, really? It looks so good as a Grihamedi, you know. You want to lose that, you know. That thing. So, in other words, it'll look exactly the same, the mentality. It's just whether Krishna's the center and the family, the home, your money, your position, everything revolves around that, or you're the center and the family, you know, like that, and then everything goes around that. That's the difference. So, the point is especially for the neophyte, you can go back and forth. These are the elements of anartha nivritti. You're actually trying to bring it to the Grihastha standard. So if someone's attempting that, they're called Grihasthas. You know, just like if someone's attempting for prema, you're called a devotee. But technically you're not a devotee till you have prema. So in the same way as we will categorize as a standard, we have categorization, all devotees, you know, within the society as Grihasthas. Right? Not Grihamedis. But that's why you have to be very careful not to come up with a Grihamedi philosophy and try to present it as Grihastha. Like that. That's why it's here. We should be able to make that distinction and understand that the comments they said, great, but that was the Grihamedi comment. You know, trying to rationalize their, you know, maidiness. Maybe that's why Ahamamati. So Sanskrit go back to the, you know. So. Yes.
There's another meaning of Medhi is from Medhinam, which means intelligence, which means that one's intelligence is revolving around and directed at the home itself. Whereas okay. Sta means just situated temporarily for the sake of service.
Okay, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. Point is there's always that central is the house rather than. Nice. Good.
Made in America.
Huh?
Made in America.
Made in America. Made in the USA. Okay. The process of going back home, back to Godhead, is to hear about the Supreme Lord and His name, form, attributes, pastime, paraphernalia, and variegatedness. Foolish persons do not know. And variegatedness, right? So sometimes we wonder, why are we getting this technical point? That's the variegatedness, right? And we see is how all the little subtle differences are, right? Foolish people do not know this. They want to hear something about the name, form, etc. of everything temporary. And they do not know how to utilize this propensity of hearing for the ultimate good. Misguided as they are, they also create some false literatures about the name, form, attributes, etc. of the ultimate truth. One should not, therefore, become a Grihamedi simply to exist for envying others. One should become a real householder in terms of the scriptural injunctions. So implying the intelligence, how to be, you know, just situated there, not actually be there. You know, it's just like, let's say, one is in a the Grand Central Terminus, right? And so one can get all the benefits that one gets from the place by and not having to live there, right? You won't consider the person living there is actually getting the most benefit from the place.
True.
Right? So that's the thing. So the Grihastha is you're getting all the benefits, you don't actually live there. You're living in Krishna consciousness. You're only situated there. Right? But the Grihamedi is living there, so he's not actually getting the benefits of the Grihastha situation by engaging all those things in the Lord's service. Right. So he, you know, in other words, that would be like the bum considering he's superior to all others in the station because he lives there. I live here. You guys are just transiting through here, you know. But this is my place.
You can have it.
No, that's another. Yes, of course.
Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur writes in his commentary to the same verse, Atma Tattva means, who am I? What should I do? What is my future? How will I get deliverance? Those living in the house do not ask these questions. Apa Shyatam. Griyamedinam means those who are attached to their houses, absorbed in five sins in the house. Medir means violence.
Here's another.
Yeah.
Another term. Because that's the nice thing about Sanskrit, is it has so many terms, and then each one brings out a particular relevance of the thing. But when we say it, then there is the general context. That's always your primary understanding. And then these add to that. Right? So violence, because of the five, was what Manu mentions, that you have, by living in the house, there are five great sins are committed. Right, the means living entities being killed because of water, fire, the broom, the grinding stone, the mortar, and what was the fifth?
Scratching.
It was like, five, right?
Yeah.
Water, fire, the broom, the grinding mortar.
The grinding stone and the mortar.
Yes.
Because one you grind them to death, the other you beat them to death.
Yes.
Nowadays, not so many people have mortars, but
blenders.
They have blenders. Yeah. Right. So therefore, it's violence. They're absorbed in those things because that's how everything happens. Everything happens. You know, your hearth and home, right? Everything happens. The heating, the cooking, the cleaning. You know, water's always there. Drinks are always there. You know, all that's bathing, drinking, all these cleaning, all these things are going on. And so one is absorbed in these things. That makes the house. So the violence is there. So they're absorbed in that. While the Grihamedi, the Grihastha, is doing those things connected to the Lord, right? Serving the Lord, doing sacrifice involved in the Sankirtan Yajna, serving Vaishnavas, right? Serving the living entity, you know, distributing prasad, like this. Does that make sense? Studying the scriptures,
yes.
Then they're freeing themselves from this.
Yes.
So that's a grihastha.
The living entities who are unwillingly taking part in this, they're getting benefit because it's connected to Krishna. But dying from the mortar, the broom. And
I mean, if it's involved in Krishna consciousness,
yes, of
course. Okay. That's the thing, is that we don't understand, is that pious credits means you're chanting all the living entities floating around in the air, they're getting that benefit. Right? They don't understand a whole lot.
Neither do we.
Yeah. Oh, that's another thing.
I'm just saying it works regardless.
I mean, they don't even have ears, right? You know, so they're just, you know, the sound vibration vibrates. Yeah. No? And now, maybe it's just conditioning, because I thought he raised his hand, you raised
his hand. It's the 10
years old. Okay.
What are you doing to me?
Okay.
Absorption in material sound leads to indulgence in materialistic activities, like working hard for maintaining family members and sex. 213. As a result, one becomes too attached to the fallible soldiers, loses one's intelligence, and although sufficiently experienced, he does not see things as they are. Right? Sufficiently experienced, the man's been through life, has seen all the things that can happen, but at the same time can't apply that in family life. Right? Does that make sense? The same problem comes up, is one can't see how the laws of nature are functioning and apply it into the family life. So even though he sees that certain situations generate certain things, he can't see and apply that into his own personal life.
Yes.
He could see it in others, but he can't apply it to himself. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport, this material world exists only as a dream due to our attachment to it. That's why it's a dream. If it's not our attachment to the material world is not a dream. Right? Then we're dealing with reality.
Yes.
Our friends, relatives, and so-called wives and children are not only fallible, but also bewildered by the outward glamour of material existence. Right, so we're bewildered by them, and they're bewildered by the material energy. So you kind of have a double, double problem here. As such, they cannot save us. But still, because that's why it's fallible soldiers, right? It means you can't have soldiers that means you can't. You won't be protected by soldiers who they themselves are in the process of getting shot, right? It doesn't work so well, right? As such, they can still we think that we are safe within the orbit of family, society, or country. The whole materialistic advancement, right, because means orbit because we put that in the center. The whole materialistic advancement of human civilization is like the decoration of a dead body. Everyone is a dead body flapping only for a few days. So does that mean that in the 20s the flappers were actually more transcendentally situated because they understood the position of actually
not so known transcendental process?
Yes, okay. And yet all the energy of human life is being wasted in the decoration of this dead body. Yeah. Sukadev Goswami is pointing out the duty of the human being after showing the actual position of bewildered human activities. Persons who are devoid of knowledge of Atmatattva are misguided, but those who are devotees of the Lord and have perfect realization of transcendental knowledge are not bewildered. Right? So this Atmatattva, as we mentioned before, was who am I, what should I do, what is my future, how will I get deliverance? Right, so who am I? What should I do? Right, so that means of that, what should I be doing? What should I not be doing? What is the future? So what's the ultimate goal? How to attain that?
Yes.
That should be the... Having explained in verses 2 to 4, what should not be heard, chanted, or remembered. Right? In verses 5 to 6, Sukadeva Goswami advises that one should hear, chant, and remember the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he's pointed it out in seed form, that you should hear about the Lord, and you shouldn't be doing these activities. Right? Now he'll get into the detail of what that means. Yes.
I was going to say, maybe the same question at the beginning of Tattva Vivek. The exact same question.
Oh, okay. So then it's, I say, also preliminary Bhagavatam.
Yeah.
Right? You know, just what, taking that which is important. Yeah, and then showing all the deviations that people can get into. Right? Yeah. Okay, following the same principle, because there Bhaktivinoda Thakur shows all the ways people can get distracted, and then the second half is how they all be properly engaged. Sukadeva Goswami glorifies the Shravana process which sanctifies the ears, heart, and memory via submissive oral reception of the sublime vibrations of Krishna Katha, right? Via submissive oral reception, right? So if it's not submissive, then the purification will be less. To that degree that the submission is there, that degree it will be more, right? That's why one can hear these things and not become purified, because one is not submissively hearing. One is challenging. That's why it says one shouldn't use that method. This raises one to the topmost position of love for Krishna and detachment from matter, as both Sri Krishna and his katha are transcendental. One should thus mold his life to always remember Krishna, and one should especially be prepared to fix his mind upon Krishna at the time of death. 5 to 6. Srila Prabhupada explains, by hearing about and glorifying the Lord, all a person's activities become molded into spiritual activities, and thus all conceptions of material miseries become completely vanquished. One can achieve the highest perfection, provided one is able to reach the stage of Narayana Smriti, or constant remembrance of the Personality of Godhead. This is possible only by the association of a pure devotee, who can give a finishing touch to the transcendental activities of all jnanis, yogis, or karmis in terms of prescribed duties defined in the scripture. Right? Here, again, according to terms, in terms of prescribed duties. Right? In other words, that's what you're supposed to be doing. He says, so what should one be doing? Right? That's prescribed duties given in the scriptures connected to Krishna. Right? And so how will that happen? By associating with such devotees who are discussing about Krishna. Right? Then one will be able to do that. So as we mentioned before, by hearing about and glorifying, all a person's activities become molded in spiritual activity. It doesn't say one may be. It says they become. As you hear, you start to mold all your activities.
Yes.
So it's just a matter of time before all of them have been connected. Right? It's not a separate process. It's the same process. None of the devotees of the Lord ever deviated from the path of devotional service by taking to other methods as adopted by the jnanis or yogis. Everyone is anxious to achieve the highest perfection of his particular activity. And it is indicated herein that such perfection is Narayana Smriti, for which everyone must endeavor his best. In other words, life should be molded in such a manner that one is able to progressively remember the personality of Godhead in every step of life. In his commentary to verse 6, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura writes, if persons doing jnana, karma, or other processes become devotees by association with devotees, they do not again perform those other processes. They become successful. Right. So, they do not again perform those other processes. They become successful. Right. So, in other words, they take up devotional service. That's success.
Yes.
Other things are not considered. So karma, jnana, yoga are not considered success. That is expressed in this verse. For jnanis, yogis, and karmis to obtain such a birth is best. What birth is that? That is a successful birth. If, with the end of jnana, yoga, and karma, ante, not literally the end, but by approximation, pure bhakti, remembrance of Narayana appears, as in the case of the Kumaras, Navyogendras, Prachina Barhi, and others. At the end signifies that even if they give up bhakti, they do not again practice the other processes. So then that one has taken this up, this highest process. One won't again have faith that these other processes can actually get you transcendental benefit or some serious benefit. Right? One may be involved, but one knows that this is not going to do anything for you. Yes.
But what process a person like that can do if he stopped to do bhakti?
Self square tomatoes. No. It just means they go back into whatever their previous life was. But having gone back there, they're never the same. So the point is this, even a devotee seemingly leaves the direct practice of Krishna consciousness. They're not like karmis. They're totally different. Because they see things according to transcendental vision. It's just a matter of how much they can involve themselves. So that's the point, is they never actually go back, even if they give up the direct devotional process.
Mm-hmm.
They never go back. Yes.
I think ISKCON got sued in the 80s by someone who couldn't enjoy the material energy anymore.
Yeah?
Yeah, she got kind of converted back by her family, and then finally they sued because she couldn't get any taste from material activity. So they lost. Yeah. One devotee who was helping preparing the case.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It was dismissed.
Of course,
but not to say that it's done, you know, that you can't go back.
Can't. No, you can't go back. That's the point, because now you know too much.
Yeah, exactly. You can't unlearn.
Like I remember talking to a bunch of kids at one of our farms, and they're going to basically
more the regular kind of karmi educational system and all that. And but they were joking amongst themselves how the karmi kids are so stupid. Right? Not that academically they're dull. Just as far as life goes and knowing what's going on in the world and the creation, just so they're so dull. So they never associate with them. So you find it's interesting is that even the second generation who is not necessarily interested in dynamic devotional service, they won't really associate with those who are not devotees. They just associate amongst themselves. Right? Because it's just, you can't go back to being so ignorant about what's going on. So therefore ante means at the end. It means when you take up devotional service, that's basically the end of everything else. Yes. You know? one example, what I think I mentioned. So one devotee in New York, he was doing the decorations for, I think, Janmashtami or something. And somebody walked in and they started to engage them. And so then, after being engaged for some time, the person was, you know, involved nicely in it. Then the devotee started laughing. And then the guests asked him, "Why are you laughing?" He says, "Because your material life is finished. You won't be able to go back and do the same thing. You've already taken the step." Verses 7-11. Even the liberated persons are attracted by Krishna Katha. The highest type of Krishna Katha is chanting of the holy name. In this section, Sri Sukadeva relates that at the end of Dwapara Yuga, he studied the great literature Srimad Bhagavatam from his father. Sukha was a perfectly liberated soul even before his birth, yet the topics of the Lord's pastimes were attractive to he who was beyond all material attraction. Such attachment to the transcendental qualities of the Lord constitutes the way of further advancement even for a siddha completely detached from matter. Srila Sukadeva Goswami says that the topmost transcendentalists take pleasure in always describing the glories of the Lord. 7. This is confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam 1.7.10, where Sukadeva Goswami says, "All different varieties of Atmaramas, those who take pleasure in Atma or spiritual self, especially those established on the path of self-realization, though freed from all kinds of material bondage, desire to render unalloyed devotional service under the personality of Godhead. This means that the Lord possesses transcendental qualities and therefore can attract everyone, including liberated souls." Right. Yeah, so then this is also used in, I think before, was used in the reverse to show that the Lord must be transcendental. Otherwise you can't... The transcendentalists aren't attracted to anything material. So if they're attracted to Krishna, must mean he's transcendental. Right? And him being transcendental, he can attract those who are transcendental, because the personal transcendental is superior to the impersonal transcendental. The fact that the liberated souls are attracted by the Lord's pastimes proves two things: that the Lord is transcendental and that his personal feature is the highest truth. This is explained by Srila Prabhupada and Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in their commentaries to 2.1.7. Srila Prabhupada writes, "The common man who is under the spell of material energy takes it for granted that the Lord is like one of us." Right? I think they even made a song. Right? "And therefore he refuses to accept the transcendental nature of the Lord's form, name, etc. The topmost transcendentalist is not interested in anything material, and his taking interest in the matter of the Lord's activities is definite proof that the Lord is not like one of us in the material world."
So, yeah. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur writes, "The perfection is to realize the sweetness of the qualities and form of the Lord. That is far superior to merging in Brahman. Those situated beyond the gunas, who have gone beyond rules and prohibitions, who are liberated, take pleasure in glorification of the qualities of Lord, not in the happiness of impersonal Brahman." The word generally is used because some Jivan Mukhas perform glorification of the Lord's qualities in order to merge in the Brahman, and they do not take pleasure in those glorifications. The statement made by Srila Sukadeva Goswami that the topmost transcendentalists, so that's why he says topmost, because there are transcendentalists who don't do this, but it's very rare. The topmost transcendentalist, who is beyond the jurisdiction of regulations and restrictions, mainly takes to the task of hearing about the glorifying the personality of Godhead, is verified by his personal example. Sukadeva Goswami relates how he studied Srimad Bhagavatam from his father, Srila Vyasadeva, at the end of the Dwapara Yuga. Text 8. The meaning of scripture is impossible to learn by dint of one's intelligence. Therefore, even a perfect person, as Srila Sukadeva Goswami accepted as spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport, "Srimad Bhagavatam, or for that matter, any other scientific literature, cannot be studied at home by one's own intellectual capacity. Medical books of anatomy or physiology are available in the market, but no one can become a qualified medical practitioner simply by reading such books at home. One has to be admitted to the medical college and study the books under the guidance of learned professors. Similarly, Srimad Bhagavatam, a postgraduate study of the science of Godhead, can only be learned by studying at the feet of the realized soul, like Sukadeva, like Srila Vyasadeva." Right? So here's where Bhagavatam is put into the postgraduate position. Right? So that's why we deal with it on that level. So the point is being an advanced study, it can only be studied under the direction of somebody. You know, you want to figure out, how to get your, phone to work. Okay, then you look at the little manual. But it's interesting to note, I remember that when the phones first came out, the manuals how to use them were very big. Right? And now the manual is basically just how to make a phone call or send an SMS. Anything else you want to know, you have to actually deal with the person. Right? So you have to approach authority. So even there, it's been understood it's a waste of time making big manuals, because no one can understand. If Sukadeva Goswami studied Bhagavatam at the end of the Dwapara Yuga, why then in verse 8 he uses the word Dwapara Adao, or the beginning of Dwapara Yuga? Srila Prabhupada explains, Vyasadeva appeared at the end of Dwapara Yuga as the son of Satyavati, and therefore the word Dwapara Adao, or the beginning of Dwapara Yuga, in this context, means just prior to the beginning of Kali Yuga. The logic of this statement, according to Srila Jiva Goswami, is comparable to that of calling the upper portion of the tree the beginning. The root of the tree is the beginning of the tree, but in common language, the upper portion of the tree is first seen. In that way, the end of the tree is accepted as its beginning. So it means you're looking at this end. So this is the beginning of. Because your view of it is back that way. So, yes?
Yes.
No? Fine. Okay. So end here, then we'll continue the evening.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaurav ki.